Speaking of keeping score of how things are going, Philip Shaw joins us now, the financial advisor at Goldstone Financial. Hey, Philip, you want to predict the outcome of some games for us today?
Unfortunately, John, I don't have any predictions for you, but it's going to be an exciting day for the city either way with all three teams starting out.
Has the dust settled on this banking thing now as if it never happened, or are there some long-term repercussions here? Is this going to make a difference in my world, Philip?
I don't know about your world specifically, but there are definitely going to be some lingering effects. I'm not concerned that we're going to have further bank failures from here. A lot of what happened was fairly isolated to the couple of banks that had issues. But what it will mean is likely a tightening of lending standards. Or in other words, banks are going to be a little more careful about who they're lending money to and how much they're lending.
So what would an example of that be?
Well, for example, you know, Silicon Valley Bank was involved with a lot of startup companies, and a lot of new businesses are always looking for financing for operations. With tighter lending standards, a lot less banks are going to be open to giving those kind of loans, and especially smaller companies, especially startups, are going to have a harder time getting financing and paying for their operations.
And that was the value of an SVB, right? I mean, they were tech-centric. They were willing to take risk. If you want another cool app or gadget, somebody's got to invest money to make that happen. And if a traditional or local bank doesn't feel like they know what's going on in that space, you need a bank that does. That's the void they fill, right?
They absolutely did. Unfortunately, as with any startup, and especially in the tech world, that came with a lot of risk for Silicon Valley Bank. Tech companies in particular are going to have a harder time finding financing now that Silicon Valley Bank is not filling that void in the same way. But because they were filling that void, they took on a lot more risk. That's also why I'm not concerned about a lot of the other banks. They were taking on some pretty specific risk that didn't necessarily play out for them.
Well, I'm thinking of the other types of businesses too. So I want to open a pizza joint. Or my small shop that manufactures tools wants to expand with another 80,000 square feet of shop space. So I'm going to need another $1 million. Those kinds of prospects. Philip, what do you think about that?
Well, that's going to be harder for a couple of reasons. One is the bank may have some additional due diligence they want from you. You know, they really want to know that you're going to be able to pay the loan back. But the second reason it's going to be harder is you have higher interest rates now than you had a year, 2 years ago. If you're taking out a loan and your loan rate just went up by 5 or 6%, that's going to cost you a lot more money. It's going to make that expansion a lot more difficult to handle.
Well, it seems to me like the interest rates, that was all the business of the Fed. Now you're making it sound as though this is the interest of the banks themselves. Is that right?
Well, the one leads into the other. If the banks can basically borrow cheap money from the Fed, they're able to extend cheaper money to the people they're lending out to as well. As soon as the Fed starts causing higher interest rates, you're going to see higher interest rates across the board.
Yeah.
That's also why you're seeing mortgage rates up from, you know, below 3% to 6.5% today.
We're talking about the markets. We're talking about interest rates. Philip Shaw is the financial advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. And I thought that the silver lining of the bank problems was that it was actually going to pressure interest rates down a little bit. Do you not see it that way, Philip?
No, I agree with you, John. That is actually the long-term outlook of that. In the short term, the Fed still has every intention of keeping rates close to where they are and probably for a longer amount of time than people predicted. But because they're starting to see some cracks in the economy, they may lead to lower rates coming here in the next year, 2 year time range.
When do you think we're going to get to zero or a minus sign?
Oh, to a negative interest rate? My expectation is we still have a ways to go on that, to call it 18 months or so.
Really, 18 months or so?
Until we're actually seeing rates coming back down.
You pointed out to us that there are 100, 200 banks that are struggling right now. I guess the point being that the occasional bank failure is not a four-alarm fire, is it?
No, it's really not. And, you know, prior to 2008, even, there was a lot of bank failures in the early 2000s, and historically these things happen. The 190 banks that are at risk are only at risk if over half of their depositors pull all of their money. So if the banks lost half of their assets, they might have some problems. But that's a pretty unlikely scenario as well.
Well, I'm going to get online and tell all my friends, hey, the bank could fail if we all pull our money out, so let's all pull our money out, and then the bank will fail. It's so cutting off your nose to spite your face, which is what happened at SVB.
Oh, exactly. It's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, where as more people are pulling their money out of the bank, more people are at risk. So the best thing we can do for ourselves is remain calm about it. You know, most folks are not at a risk at their bank. They have FDIC insurance up to $250,000. And the average person is not keeping more than $250,000 in a single bank.
What do you see for job security? If there is a recession, part of the fallout of that will be some people will lose their jobs. We're already seeing that in some sectors, including tech. What do you see for job security this year?
You know, I don't see a major recession like a 2008 type scenario happening, but where a lot of those job cuts are happening is in the growth areas of the organizations. You know, if they have new projects, they have new initiatives, a lot of people that I know that are being laid off, and what we're seeing in the economy is it's the new development. It's not the core businesses. Hmm. So, you know, they're cutting the metaverse division. Because it's new development. They're not cutting core services and core products.
What do you see about inflation generally, the price of consumer goods?
At this point, I believe, you know, our belief is that inflation has peaked and began to taper off, and we're seeing that in a lot of the data as well. You know, that was more than just a financial issue. There was also a lot of supply chain problems, both here and globally. And especially as COVID restrictions have come up and a lot of these supply chain issues have resolved themselves, we're going to see a lot more return to normalcy come along with that.
Philip, I think a lot of people said $250,000. Who's got $250,000 in a bank? And if you do, then open up another account at another bank. I mean, that's a very manageable and good problem, I think, for a lot of people to have. I think what gets lost in that, though, is that plenty of businesses do need $250,000 plus in the bank, and it's partly how they pay their bills and make their payroll. So what's the strategy for businesses, maybe small and medium-sized businesses, relative to their banking now?
You know, for a lot of smaller businesses, they can keep, even for a small business, you can keep larger amounts spread across numerous banks. It's actually one of the silver linings of the FDIC, which is, the FDIC is paid for by the banks, by the way. The FDIC coming back and bailing out Silicon Valley Bank allowed them to continue the startup companies making their payroll, dealing with their operations, having all that happen. It was a big silver lining of what was going on there, the FDIC stepping in. But for the average small to mid-sized company, you can keep $250,000 per bank account spread across numerous banks. And if you need higher cash flow than that, a lot of banks will offer you a line of credit as well.
Do you have any advice for people with their cash right now if they have been sitting on the sidelines watching the market go down? I know I'm asking you to predict the bottom of the market here, but what advice do you have for people who have been sort of waiting for things to turn?
Well, I'm definitely not going to predict the bottom of the market. You got that one right. But, you know, it's something that we're dealing with clients every day, is the recommendation always is to keep your planning in mind, to keep your long-term objectives in mind, remain diversified in your investments, and really understand that, you know, the short-term volatility today may not impact your long-term goals, and that you're never going to be able to time the market. That said, if you're sitting in cash right now, there's a lot of things you can be doing for yourself, even short-term CDs, treasuries, yeah, money market accounts that are paying 4.5%, 5% interest. That's going to be a lot better for you than sitting in a 0% savings account.
So if I take 4% or 5% for 6 months or a year, You think that's a relatively safe bet because you don't think the market's going to improve by 5% over the next 6 months?
I don't know if the market's going to improve by 5% over the next 6 months or not, and I don't think there's anybody that could tell you with certainty one direction or the other. What I'm saying is it's better than sitting in a savings account.
Yeah.
If you're saying, look, you know what, the volatility's bothering me, I'm losing sleep at night, I just don't want to be involved in it, getting a 5% return over the next 6 months is still a pretty safe bet.
Yeah, right. How fortunate for all of us if you say, oh, gee, 6 months from now, I could have been making more than 5%. I hope you're wrong about that, because that would be a good scenario for all of us. Philip Shaw is a financial advisor at GoldstoneFinancialGroup.com. Actually, .co, right, is the website for you guys, or is it .com?
No, GoldstoneFinancialGroup.com.
Got it. Philip, nice to talk to you. Let's talk again. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you for having me, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. We're talking now to Jim Dahlke, the national editor. ChicagoInno.com is where you can find some of his stuff. He's the national editor at American Inno, and he regularly joins us on the tech and angel investor scene, which has suddenly become a very perilous space, Jim. It's funny how, as much as we've been doing this, all of a sudden investing in startups and angel investing has been a very hot topic, hasn't it become?
It has. And, you know, it's interesting, as we've seen, obviously, the sort of turmoil at the public market level for tech companies. It tends to take a while for it to sort of affect early stage investing. But, you know, it certainly has in some degree played a little bit of a role there. But, you know, I think the angel investors that have been active over the last few years continue to be so. There's still lots of, as investors call it, dry powder out there. So there's lots of money currently within these, you know, small angel funds. And I think we'll continue to see some strong angel investing for the years and months to come. So more to come, though, on how sort of the overall tech turmoil continues to trickle its way down to the angel investing scene.
But the angel investor is typically somewhat removed from a banking scenario, right? These are people with money to spend. They're looking to invest cash on hand. Is that right?
That's right. And, you know, what we saw over the last few years is a lot of new angel funds, especially in Chicago. There's kind of a growing effort among a lot of tech leaders in the city to encourage angel investing, basically say, hey, you know, if you've been in, you know, the tech industry for a while, maybe you've made some pretty good money over the last 10, 20 years, you might have got the ability to invest in sort of the next wave of startups. And we're really starting to see that kind of among Chicago's most seasoned tech leaders, where they're sort of galvanizing the rest of the tech community and say, hey, you know, your startup did well over the last decade. Why don't you kind of use those funds to sort of support the next wave of innovation in Chicago? So we've definitely seen quite a bit of angel investing activity and new funds pop up over the city.
And is the trade then the investor gets a share of the company, kind of like Shark Tank?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, when you hit one that works, it can work really, really well, because, you know, you're very, very early on these businesses that, you know, can provide a very significant return. So we're starting to see a few examples of that. So some companies in Chicago that have exited that have provided some really, really handsome returns for angel investors. One was a QB, which I believe exited for about $100 million. It was an under-desk elliptical trainer, and so that provided some really, really successful returns for early angel investors, a few of which were in Chicago.
What does DriftNet do?
Yeah, so DriftNet, an interesting new startup in Chicago. DriftNet, unfortunately, it's, you know, it's one of those startups you wish didn't have to exist, but unfortunately does. It's using artificial intelligence to make schools safer. It's got an AI technology that hooks into a school's camera system. Using sensors and thermal imaging, it can detect where people are throughout the school, both kind of faculty and students, in case of an emergent sort of situation, active shooter situation. It helps first responders know where students are and located during this emergency. And this technology also has weapon and shot detection technology, so it knows if a firearm is on school grounds. So that technology integrates with emergency dispatch systems and can alert first responders immediately when a weapon is detected, right, using the artificial intelligence hooked into the camera system. So this is a company that launched actually the day after the Parkland, Florida shooting back in 2018, and just this month now announced a $15 million raise. So they're looking to get their technology into more school systems across the country.
It's out there, though. Is it operational?
So it looks like they're getting into school systems right now. So, you know, that's what this big raise is going to be, right, is to get this push into more schools. And so, you know, it's tricky, right, because every school system, every district operates a little bit differently. So, you know, they're going to have to try to, you know, kind of canvas the country here and sort of get as many school systems on board. But certainly, you know, a $15 million Series A is quite significant, especially for a Chicago startup. So, you know, they say they're hoping to double their team and just move into a new space here in Chicago and expect them to get into some more school systems here shortly.
Why is Brian Urlacher in your news?
Yeah, Brian Urlacher is one of the investors behind a new Chicago startup called Ludex. Ludex raised $8 million for its sports trading card app. It lets you scan your sports cards with your phone, and its app will tell you the value of that card. So I don't know, John, if you ever collected sports cards. I remember when I did as a kid, you'd could sometimes come across those books that would give you the rough value of your sports cards, and you never knew exactly the accuracy of those or how up-to-date those books were. And it kind of made it a little tricky to know exactly what the value of your sports cards were. And so we're starting to see really a wave of apps that can kind of come in and fit that need and really give you an idea of like, hey, here are the sports cards that are actually worth something. Here are the ones that really aren't. And you can kind of take that information and run with it. So what this startup is able to do is work with both sports cards as well as Pokemon and Magic the Gathering cards as well. So they think that they've got a good opportunity here to give you pretty good intel on what your sports cards are worth. So maybe dust that old box from your mom's attic off and get a sense of what your cards are worth. They say they have grown their community to more than 200,000 users since launching in November.
Yeah, I totally believe that. How many of us have boxes of those? My son used to get the full set every year of Topps baseball cards, and he's not a little boy anymore. So I would take it, scan it, boop, it would recognize the card, maybe the condition, and go, nothing, a nickel, $1,000, something like that. I have Operation Desert Storm trading cards. Imagine that those came out. Somebody sent them to me. I've got them in a box somewhere. I don't know if those would be in their AI, if they'd recognize them. I'm going to put $1 million into that business.
Yeah, and you know, sports cards really had a really major comeback during the pandemic. You know, sports card trading became you know very much in fashion again. You know, by a lot of collectors, it became the increase in value from a lot of these cards really skyrocketed. You know, during the pandemic, I think things are coming back down to earth just a little bit. But I think there was like a reinvigoration in the sports card trading community sort of during the pandemic, maybe because there was no sports to watch at the time or people were just sort of, you know, bored at home. But, you know, the industry really kind of came alive. And I think now we're starting to see some sort of tech forward approaches that are the industry.
You're talking about an insurance business, too. What's Kin Insurance all about?
Yeah, Kin Insurance, the Chicago company, they do home insurance. So they're a tech-focused firm, kind of a direct-to-consumer competitor with some of the larger insurance companies. They focus mostly on homes kind of in severe weather areas. So you can think Florida, Louisiana. They were all, you know, prepped to do a SPAC deal. So this was an opportunity to go public through a special purpose acquisition company. They canceled those plans in early 2022, and we just chatted with the CEO, and he really says that they think they perhaps dodged a bullet there, really, as the market has been less favorable to public companies. And so they just finished raising $109 million Series D fundraising round. So rather than through the public markets, they're really going to the private investors to kind of continue to build up their coffers and grow their firm. And so they say that they've been able to continue to grow, continues to sort of slowly grow its business, and really is kind of able to do that, it believes, because it missed, you know, the trickiness of the public markets. And so we'll have to wait and see what Kin's exit strategy is from here. They say they still plan, you know, to go public when the market becomes a little bit more favorable. But, you know, it's a really, you know, an example of how timing is everything for a lot of these companies, whether you know, you went public, you know, at the right time or the wrong time, or kind of holding steady. So Ken is an example of maybe a business that was benefited by, you know, not hitting the public waters when it had the opportunity to.
Read more at ChicagoInno.com. The national editor at American Inno is Jim Dahlke. Regularly joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk next week, Jim.
Thanks, John.
Time for more business news on the Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The number of workers back in the office has ticked up just a bit. The company that handles security swipes into and out of office buildings says the number's at nearly 51%. Castle Systems has been keeping track of those security badge swipes. The Chicago Metro just hit 50.8%. That's ahead of most of the other big cities, where the average is 48.4%. Los Angeles is at 47.8%. New York City is at 47%. More good news about Illinois' finances. The state has added another $150 million into its cash reserves. The money is being deposited into the Budget Stabilization Fund, otherwise known as the Rainy Day Fund. That account now has $1.22 billion in it to be used during a recession or economic downturn. The level's at a new record high. The fund's scheduled to get another $850 million by the end of June. Ratings agencies have cited the health of the fund in recent upgrades of Illinois' debt. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
We've got the business of food, and Steve Alexander.
Yeah, we're talking baseball today after I tell you we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Opening day today for the Cubs, and it got me thinking about how essential agriculture is to the game, and that includes the fiber used in the coats and sweaters you'll need today, and at the concession stand, beer and...
Hot dogs and baseball have a really strong connection that goes back to the late 1800s.
That's Eric Mittenthal, the president of the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council, and some of us maintain a hot dog tastes no better than it does at the ballpark.
Correct.
And on the field at Wrigley, without agriculture, there'd be no... And there'd be no balls. The pieces of leather with 108 stitches holding them together come from the hides of Holstein cows. And most of the gloves worn by MLB players are made from cow hides tanned at Horween Leather Company at 2015 North Elston Avenue, right along the river.
We've been in business since 1905.
That is Skip Horween, and his company tans the leather for the Rawlings and Nocona gloves used by major leaguers.
So we would get, you know, hides in, which are a byproduct of the meat industry. We're selecting the top grade hides to make baseball gloves, and we actually tan them a second time so that it will soften in use, you know, as the user wears it on his hands.
He says the color of the leather doesn't vary much.
For years, everybody just used golden tan color, and then in the last 15 years or so, we've done much more black than tan.
Every now and then, you'll see a red or a blue glove, and Skip says it all began many years ago with a special order.
When Ken Griffey Jr. came up with Seattle, we did that sort of cobalt blue.
Okay, Skip. Season's here. Cubs or White Sox?
I missed the meeting where you're only allowed to like one Chicago team. I want Chicago to do well, so I'm good with either one.
That works. Horween Leather also tans the cowhide used for NFL footballs and NBA basketballs, but not the basketballs used in the NCAA. Skip says those are made from synthetic materials, not from leather. And as March Madness continues, there are big connections to agriculture, which I will tell you about tomorrow. From the farm to your belly, slim pickings on the food calendar. Today's National Turkey Neck Soup Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Today we continue the Your Hometown Tour with a trip to Tinley Park. Located southwest of the city, the village of Tinley Park is a place you probably should call home. Take some time and explore Tinley Park with us today. Sponsored by McDonald's.
Yeah, we've been doing that all day and we'll continue. It's 12:53 on WGN on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Carrie Westberg Quitter is the owner and operator of one of the mainstays in Tinley Park, the Tinley Park Roller Rink. TinleyRink.com is the website for the wheels over there. Hey, Carrie, it's John Williams. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. How's business? I haven't been to a roller rink in a while.
Business, John, is booming. We had one of our best years ever last year.
Why do you? To what would you attribute that, Carrie?
Well, John, it's really interesting. First of all, I'd like to thank you for having me on your show. It's an honor to be here to talk about the Tinley Park Roller Rink.
Yeah.
Well, Tinley Park Roller Rink, John, is very unique. in the sense that it was built in the 50s, and it started out as a square dance hall. And my parents, Marge and Ray Quitter, started leasing the rink in the 50s and turned it into a roller rink. So we have been in business close to 60 years now.
I suppose people were anxious after the pandemic to get back out again, huh?
Yes, that is correct, John, because we were closed for a few months, and then we could only have 50 people at a time in the rink. And once those mandates were lifted, then people were coming out in droves. And a lot of families are coming and skating together.
Oh, that's nice. I'm wondering what's new in roller rinks because, I mean, I think we all have spent time in our youth doing that. You put the skates on,
Yeah. You
go round, around, around. Sometimes you go the other way. Maybe there's a disco ball. Maybe there's a fun song.
That's correct.
Is that the drill?
That's
Is that correct. What I'm thinking about?
Yeah, it's timeless, John. You know, like I said, we've been doing this for 60 years. And when you come into the Tinley Park Roller Rink, it's like going back into time. It's like a time capsule. You have the original building with the original maple floor that was handcrafted, along with our new amenities. You know, I got new carpeting that glows in the dark, new sound system, new skates, both quads and rollerblades. And the music is always changing. We have live DJs that play current music and with requests. So the people are skating, they're getting lost in the music, they're getting their groove on, and it's timeless. Parents are connecting with their children, they're bringing their kids in for their first time and showing them how to skate. And there's a connection, John, and I think the common denominator is roller skating.
We're talking to Kerry Westberg Quitter, the owner and operator of Tinley Park's Roller Rink. The Tinley Park Roller Rink is at tinleyrink.com. I saw in your bio, by the way, it says you've produced several Hollywood films. So talk to me about that.
Yes, I have. I have, John. I've made four feature films through the years. The first one we made was a drama called The Learning Curve. We filmed that in 2000. And the director on that film was Eric Schwab, who was the assistant director on Top Gun, Maverick. And Eric wrote and directed The Learning Curve, along with my producer and partner and friend, Oscar Delgado. And then we made, Eric and I made a family film, and we filmed it in Thailand called My Lucky Elephant, where Eric also wrote and directed that film, which I produced. So and we made a horror film, and we also made a faith-based film called St. Michael Meet the Angel, which was just released, and we're going to put it in Latin America in Spanish in the middle of May. So that's been very exciting.
I should imagine. Okay, I got an idea for you.
Yes, sir.
You've got these roller queens, and they're battling for the championship. And here comes a Raquel Welch-like character, and she's elbowing some ladies out of the way to cross. No?
Yes, roller derby.
Oh, it's already been made. Well, but I would just think, given your affinity for roller rinks, that would be a movie you'd make. You haven't made a roller movie yet, huh?
No, not yet. That is a possibility, John, because roller skating is booming these days, and we're very excited. And a lot of kids, a lot of young adults are at the rink now on Friday nights and Saturday nights.
Wow.
They're out with their friends. They're hanging with their friends, and parents are dropping their kids off. They're going out and doing their errands, going out to dinner, and coming back and picking them up. It's really quite amazing.
How nice to imagine that the kids aren't in front of their devices, TV sets, or computers.
Yes.
They're out actually roller skating. Kerry Westberg,
that's so true.
Quitter is the owner and operator at the Tinley Park Roller Rink. A text includes this. Thanks so much for talking about the roller rink. I've been going there since I was a kid. Now we bring the whole family. Uh-huh. It is the best place in Tinley Park. All right, Kerry, congratulations.
Hey, John, Can I make an offer? I'd like to offer the listeners to your program, because I think what you're doing is wonderful.
Yeah.
And I applaud your show. I would like your listeners, if they come to the roller rink in Tinley Park for the next 2 weeks, I would like to give them 50% off their admission.
Just mention you heard it on WGN.
Right. mention that WGN, my hometown, and I'll be happy to discount their admission 50% because I think what you're doing, John, is amazing, and I thank you.
Let's all watch The Learning Curve and My Lucky Elephant, too. Nice to talk to you, Carrie.
John, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You betcha. It's our pleasure. Hey, John, I went there for an elementary school birthday party, an absolute bomb, and I'm 70. And I skated. It's even greater than the gentleman says. What a roller rink.